Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. We thank you for listening. We hope today that you will benefit from our study. Once again, this past week, of course, the news has been pretty much dominated, and many talks among people dominated by the Charlie Kirk shooting. And I had ended up last Sunday preaching on the subject that I'd started on the radio, and I'll continue on the radio and finish that study, but it'll be more condensed because of time restraints. I wanted to be able to develop the points, so I did that in the pulpit last week. But we do appreciate you listening. We'll be picking up where we left off from our study last week, looking at some Bible examples of violence, and with emphasis today, as we did last week, on motives. I felt that was something that needed to be considered, because the question is, you know, are we experiencing something new, or have these things happened before? And really, has the motivation changed? It seems like the set of motives that you see set forth in Scripture are pretty much the same ones that we see today. So last week we talked about Cain, the first example of murder, where he rose up and murdered his brother Abel, and we pointed out that it was because of jealousy and resentment. It was because God had respected Abel's sacrifice and not his own. Anger is mentioned. Cain was very angry because of this. And the anger, of course, basically is an emotion, and so you're thinking in terms of uncontrolled, misguided, misdirected emotion. And said that, made the point that in verses 6 and 7 of Genesis 4, that you actually see God intervening. He intervening, he spoke to Cain like he had spoken to Adam and Eve in the garden, and he spoke to Cain and, of course, gave him some information that would guide his decision. But then Cain went on to make that horrible, wrong decision, and God punished him for that. Just to move on this morning and take a look at a passage in the New Testament, I categorize some of these things from basically just looking at situation in society right now and thinking in terms of acts of violence and reasons for that violence that exist today, and then thinking of the same things recorded in Scripture. So we're going to go to the next one. We're going to jump to the New Testament and think in terms of the Jews murdering Jesus, the Jewish leaders murdering Jesus. Jesus had Jews who followed him, who were his disciples, but the leadership among the Jews had Jesus executed. They worked with the Roman government, with Pilate, with Herod, and they were able to use the power of the Roman government to execute Jesus. Why did they do it? Well, Jesus had basically prophesied of this. He talked about the day in John 16 and verse 2 when people would cast you out of your synagogues, and he said that they will kill you, and he said everyone who killed you will say that he's serving God, doing God a service, some versions say there. And I want you to think about that. Do people ever do that? They have some false concept of God, and then that false definition of God allows them to do what they want to do. I mean, this is the root of idolatry. But also, even if you worship what you believe is a God, a real deity, but if that is not the God of heaven, then you could end up falling into this trap and thinking that God had guided you to do something. That's what Paul fell into. He fell into that because he was a Jew. He grew up a Jew. He had not accepted the transition to the covenant of Christ that would have happened in Acts chapter 2 with the changing of the law, and technically back on the cross when Jesus nailed the law of Moses to the cross, Colossians 2:14 states. But Saul at that time had rejected that, and so he acted on this basic premise. When he thought that he ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus, and he says, which thing I did, he thought he was right. Acts chapter 26, verses 9 through 11. That included capturing Christians and imprisoning them, and then later when they were put to death, he said he gave his voice against them. So he was just radically opposed to Christianity, radically opposed to Christ. And then all of a sudden, you remember something happened there in Acts chapter 9 on the road to Damascus. Christ miraculously appeared to him. Now all of a sudden there is reality. He cannot reject reality. So he understood he had been wrong. He talks about this in 1 Timothy 1, verses 13 through 15, calls himself the chiefest of sinners. But back in those days, before his conversion, he was thinking that he was doing God a service when he executed Christ. You know, Islamists act and today and have been for hundreds of years, and they are very militant in many cases, many of them, especially the what's called terror organization ones. You think of Hamas and Hezbollah and Abu Sayyaf and Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, and all over the world, basically, you have these groups. And there have been millions. I think a number I ran across the other day was 170 million people killed. Now, why were they killed? Well, they were killed in the name of Allah. The name, the word that Muslims use for God. So they were killed in the name of God, killed in the name of religion. Anytime anyone does that, it is baseless. And Jesus, of course, opposed Peter when he took the sword in Matthew 26. I may have mentioned that last week. So we want to think in terms of the danger of this, but also the motivations behind it. Back to the Old Testament in Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6, we read that the people before the flood were corrupt and filled with violence. Filled with violence. I made the point in the pulpit that the word violence is actually from the Hebrew word Hamas. I made the point that the Hebrew language and the Arabic language are sister languages, and so sometimes there's overlap on the words. Either the words mean the same, or they overlap a little bit and have maybe a different emphasis. But this word Hamas is used in Judges chapter 9 in verse 24 to refer to Abimelech's slaughter of his brothers. So it's used of slaughter. So when it says the earth was filled with violence, that would include what? Murder. The word basically means wrongs committed against other people, and sometimes including bloodshed, or as in Ezekiel 7:23, where it's used, bloody crimes. So what do you think of? Murder? Rape? You think of oppression, assault, kidnapping, theft, things like that. So the earth was filled with violence, and what did God do? Well, he basically exterminated all of the people on the earth. He cut off all life and started regrowing it again through Noah and his wife and his three sons and their wives and the animals that were preserved on the ark. So think about the motivations there. You know, really you could think in terms of the word power when you think of the violence there, because they were, it was kind of like the rule, law of the jungle. Each man for himself, and they promoted themselves and preserved themselves by taking advantage of other people. What about in Genesis 19? Genesis 19 and verse 6, the men of Sodom, what did they do? By the way, it says young and old. And we always like to point out that that's significant. The young people learned this behavior from the older ones. Incidentally, sometimes, and I recently heard this by someone that was critical of the Bible, they said, no, actually the homosexuals there were violent. they were violent. Well, they were violent. There's no question about that. I don't think anyone has ever denied that. However, their sin of homosexuality was also sinful. Their actions as homosexuals also constituted sin. So I think people sometimes think, well, they try to convince themselves that it wasn't the homosexuality that was wrong. It was only the violent homosexuality. It was only their attempt to rape the two men that came to, actually angels, that came to see Lot and then later Lot himself. It was both. It was both. We know that from Jude verse 7. Talks about God incinerating Sodom and Gomorrah because of their fornication and going after strange flesh or perverse. Paul defines this in Romans 1:26 and 27 when he talks about sexual relations that are against nature, in that women were lusting after women and men lusting after men. By the way, the sin words that we use today for that, or the words that we use to describe those behaviors, are lesbianism and homosexuality. And you can read about it right there in Romans 1:26 and 27. So, now, then question, were these sodomites also violent and aggressive? Yes, they were. Yes, they were. But it was both. They also acted as a gang. They acted as, you see this several times in several of these instances of violence and murder and the motives in the Old Testament. They acted as a gang. Of course, why would people do that? This is discussed in Proverbs 1:10 through 19. There are a number of reasons. This is in Proverbs 1, the passage where Solomon warned his son to not go with those who were planning and plotting to steal from their neighbor and then commit murder and shed innocent blood and take the possessions of the person that they had murdered. You see a lot of these motivations there. Then, when you think of the one in Proverbs chapter 1, you just think in terms of avarice, of greed, of wanting what other people have, and sometimes people die. Happens every day. Every day in America, throughout the world, to the tune, you know, I mean multiple times, where they want what you have and they're willing to kill you to take it, to have it. So that was it in Proverbs 1:10 through 19. Very simple. In Genesis 19, it was for power. They surrounded the house of Lot. They, you know, had it not been for those angels and their miraculous power, that would have been over for Lot and his family members, for the angels. But no, they were actually persons of God. They smote the people with blindness. You ever notice that it says that the people, after they were smitten, the sinners were smitten with blindness, that they groped around trying to find the door of the house? Even blindness did not prevent them from trying to act upon their lustful ambitions. It's really unbelievable. That's how far, how depraved people can become in desiring to practice sin. That's how far it can go. So Genesis 19 is another great example of violence, but also, as I said, most importantly, to consider motivations. But also in Judges 19, the men of Gibeah, they surrounded, they also acted as a gang. They surrounded the house of the Ephraimite worker who was staying there in Gibeah, who was host to the Levite and his concubine. They surrounded the house. And what did they want to do? They wanted to have sex with the man that was being kept there by the old Ephraimite fella. They wanted to do basically the same thing that the people of Sodom wanted to do. And this time, you know, you're reading this time about the tribe of Benjamin. You're reading about something happening in a place where the people were the people of God. As you may recall, and I went into this thoroughly in my sermon, and I don't have time to do it today here. But as you may recall, you get into the next chapter in Judges chapter 20, a fascinating read on that. Eventually, the people of Israel, the remaining tribes, the other tribes than Benjamin, rose up as one man, and what did they do? They killed almost all of the members of the tribe of Benjamin. They killed 25,000 soldiers. They killed all of the other people, and only 600 men remained alive after that event. So God had them punished. God had them punished by the other tribes of Israel because of what they had done here. That they did was rape and abuse that concubine, you remember. And I've often pointed out that this is also an example of people becoming too much affected by their culture. We don't want to become like the Levite had become in sending his concubine out to these men. And the Ephraimite who offered them his virgin daughter, I've always said that was just unbelievable. Unbelievable that that happened. So they had also been affected. I've often wondered if that was the reason why you had a loss of 22,000, then 18,000, 40,000 Israelites in the first two skirmishes. They lost to the tribe of Benjamin. Finally, of course, the third time, God was with them and they won. And there are actually several reasons set forth in that context there, but I've wondered if that could have played a role in that, because that's unreasonable what those men had done. It seems like people were wrong on all sides of this, but it was especially atrocious what the lustful people had done to that concubine. They actually did it. They raped her, of course, and killed her. So that's in Judges 19 and in Judges 20. We see the motivations there as well. Sometimes you'll see political motivations. Abimelech, the son of Gideon, he killed, this is that passage I referenced in the introduction, he actually slaughtered, we're told in Judges 9:25, his 70 brothers. That's verses 1 through 5 that record the actual account of it. It's referenced later in verse 25. And why did he do it? Because they posed a political threat. You know, one of those men, or maybe in succession several of them, could have ended up being leaders in Israel, judges in Israel. And so they were very concerned about that. Abimelech was very concerned about that, and he had them executed. Now, this ended badly for Abimelech and for his supporters, but it took about 3 years for God to mete out his punishment on Abimelech and on the people of Shechem who appointed him leader. And Shechem was destroyed, and Abimelech was killed because a woman dropped a millstone on his head, killing him. In verse 53, another example. But what was the motivation this time? The motivation was not what we think of it, wanting to have what someone else had. This was not a sexual thing like Genesis 19 and Judges 19. It was political, politically motivated. We're going to see a couple of other examples of that in the New Testament. Before we get to that, I want to talk about Jezebel. Jezebel, some great lessons we can learn from 1 Kings 21, 1 through 16. What did she do? Well, you remember that the story, verses 1 through 3 of 1 Kings 21, Ahab had just become sick, wanting a piece of property that was owned by Naboth, a vineyard, and he wanted it because, it says, because it joined his own property. So he was going to make a garden out of it. And you remember that he offered Naboth money to purchase. And you think, on the one hand, nothing wrong with that. But then you had Naboth's answer. He said, no, this is my family inheritance. I can't sell that to you. So he had moral reasons, for religious reasons, for not selling the land to Ahab. And Ahab became extremely sick, it says, vexed and sullen. And he had no appetite. That's a mark of obsession over something. So Ahab was obsessed. But keep in mind at this point, though Ahab was very wicked, he did not act in a wicked way against Naboth. But Jezebel, Jezebel came in and saw that he wasn't eating and asked him what was wrong. And he explained to her about Naboth and about his property and how he wanted it, but Naboth would not sell it to him. So what did Jezebel do? Well, Jezebel said, "You're the king," verse 7. "You're the king, you can have whatever you want." So she took this position like we see a lot of even modern politicians' attitude that many have developed. I'll never forget when Eric Swalwell, who is fiercely opposed to gun ownership by normal people, he's a very anti-Second Amendment, and someone said, "Well, you know, we have the Second Amendment. What can you do?" He said, "We're the government. We can do anything." And I thought, that's this attitude back here. It's just like Jezebel, wicked Jezebel. We are the government. 1 Kings 21:7. We can do anything. So that is a mark of extreme pride and arrogance. And people on power trips. And so Jezebel had this mentality. And what she did is she secured some false witnesses. And they said, tell for them to say that Naboth had cursed both God and the king. So they got the men of the city together and made their arguments. They said, "Naboth has cursed both God and the king." And it says the people stoned Naboth to death. Stoned him to death. Now, what do we know about Naboth? Well, he was a good man, an honorable man from everything we know. We know that he honored the laws that regulated land and inheritance. So he was seemed like a good man, but he was executed by a wicked woman. At least she had it done. Now, notice here's an example of someone basically paying others to be their instruments in meting out their terrible ways in accomplishing their terrible designs. So we have here, it's kind of like you think of a hitman. Abimelech did the same thing in the killing of his 70 brothers. He secured help from some wicked people. So here's another pattern that we see develop, the idea of instrumentality, or like hitmen we think of today, where someone is paid in order to do something atrocious. That's the situation here. So the other thing is false testimony. False testimony is bad. You know, in the giving of the law and the provisions that were made to secure justice when people had committed crimes or had been accused of committing crimes in Exodus chapter 21, you read these times. In fact, several times in the Old Testament warns against bribery and taking bribes. Proverbs talks about it. So, you see why? Because justice is not accomplished when that is done. That's what they did to Jesus, too, you may recall, when he was crucified. So then what happened? Well, Naboth is stoned to death, and Jezebel goes back to sad sack Ahab, her husband, and she said, "Naboth is dead," and it says Ahab immediately took control of his property. So those are some pretty old common motives there. Someone wants what someone else has, and they do something to them, something terrible to them, in order to get their way. In order to get their way. I thought a lot about that when I was thinking about what happened last week with Charlie Kirk. It was really about people getting their way. And if you just can't deal with someone expressing an opinion that is very different from yours and may be effectively stated, and the more effectively stated, the more dangerous it is to your view, then you might think in terms of eradicating people. That's what they did. But it's murder. It's murder. And we talked about last week on the radio program, the death penalty is stated for murder in all three dispensations of the Bible. All three different forms of divine government, the patriarchal, the mosaical, and the Christian. You have the death penalty for murder. What about in the New Testament? You get to Herod, Herod the Great. Herod the Great, what did he do? Well, he wanted to kill Jesus. because the wise men had used the term king to describe Jesus. And so he was thinking in terms of some type of political threat, kind of like Abimelech did. That Jesus would be eventually a political threat, so Herod is thinking, I may as well kill him now while he's little before he becomes powerful. Well, you remember the wise men were directed to go home a different way and not go back and report to Herod. And so he felt that he had been tricked by the wise men. That's how it's worded in the Bible. When he saw they had been tricked by them. Actually, this was God's idea for them to go a different way. It wasn't their idea, so I don't know about the word trick, but that's how he saw it. And then you remember that he decided to that he's going to have to do sort of a shotgun approach. And he ordered that all of the male children in Bethlehem and the surrounding area be executed 2 years old and under in order to make sure that that covered and included Jesus. And that was a fulfillment of an old Jeremiah prophecy in the voice of crying in Ramah. So you remember that was fulfilled in that, ultimately fulfilled in it. But this was an atrocious thing, terrible crime that he committed. He died, of course. You read about his death before you get through the end of Matthew chapter 2. But this was a terrible thing. A couple little lessons in this. You have in verse 8 this practice of cloaking one's motives. He had told these men, bring this Jesus to me that I may worship him. And I've often thought about that. What was that real? Was he sincere? No, he wanted, his designs were to kill Jesus, not to worship him. And the other thing is that in verse 16, he had become furious. The verse that actually we mentioned first, Matthew 2:16, that talks about him ordering the murder of all of those little boys. And it says he was furious. Now this one reminded me of Cain. You go back and you think about what we read about Cain in Genesis 4 and verse 5, where it says that he was very wroth, very angry. Anger can be a tremendous motivator. Sometimes that's all you have to look for in many of these types of crimes, particularly murder. Anger. People, somebody says something, does something that makes someone else extremely angry, and they lash out based upon that emotion. They are empowered by that emotion. You ever think about that? That does happen. They are actually empowered by it. And they go out and commit these atrocities. There's another Herod that you read about in the New Testament in Acts chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. This time it's Herod Agrippa, not Herod the Great. As we said, Herod the Great had died. We saw where that was recorded in Matthew 2. But what he had done, Herod had done, is he had reached out to persecute those who were in the church. Now, in the process of this, he killed James, the brother of John. Then we learn something pretty interesting. It says, when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he set out to capture Peter as well, and he did put Peter in prison. He did capture him and imprison him. But why did he do it? When he saw that it pleased the Jews. Now here again with the political motivation. So we saw this with Herod the Great. We saw it with Abimelech. This was now had become, we're not sure about the original motivation of persecuting those that were in the church that you read about in the early verses. But now we do know that he saw that it pleased the church and pleased the Jews, and so he determined to expand upon his designs. Kill James, he was going to also kill Peter. Of course, the miracle released Peter from prison and he escaped. But he saw that it pleased the Jews. You know, I think it's interesting. This is another example of where you just get through the end of that chapter. By the time you get to the end of Acts 12, this man is dead, Herod Agrippa, kind of like Acts 2. our time is up today, but I think it's profitable to go back and consider these things. See, sadly, that human nature doesn't change, but we certainly can guard our thinking on these matters, train ourselves to think like God. Again, our time is up. We hope you tune in next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.